Affairs Committee to order. It is 9:04. We've got a quorum. Present with us is Representative Cisna, Representative Olson, Co-Chair Faircloth, and myself, Gabrielle Ledoux. The first item on the agenda for today is House Bill number 404, an act establishing an Alaska Renewable Energy Task Force. And we have Co-Chair Faircloth here to introduce the bill. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Faircloth for the committee's, I want to say grins, I guess. Thank you, Madam Chair, for an opportunity to testify on and have you hear HB 404. If I could read briefly. As concerns about rising fossil fuel prices, energy security, and climate changes increase, renewable energy can play a key role in producing local, clean, and inexhaustible energy to supply Alaska's growing demand for electricity, heat, and transportation fuel. Because there is little to no fuel cost associated with generating electricity from renewable resources, more Alaskans are looking to resources like wind, geothermal, hydroelectric, oceans, and biomass to hedge against the increasing costs of natural gas and diesel fuels. Renewable energy resources provide low-risk energy that, over the long term, can lower costs. With some of the best renewable energy resources in the country, Alaska has an opportunity to be the leader in the development and bring new revenue streams to the state's economy. This is a direct quote from what AEA did in the Renewable Energy Atlas of Alaska, and it's why you have before you today HB 404. After our working group conversation, there is a CS before you this morning that trims down the scope of the task force, as well as who would serve on the task force, almost entirely to a legislative body. The governor has announced an energy czar, per se, and I believe, and that is tongue-in-cheek, that Steve Anguson is online with us. The only other comment that I would like to say in regards to AEA is their mission doesn't really define what we want to do in the task force. It certainly is a component, but under 4483070, the purpose of the Alaska Energy Authority, very briefly, is to look at the economic welfare of the people of the state of Alaska by providing a means of financing and operating power projects and facilities that recover and use waste energy, and by carrying out the powers and duties assigned under 4245. So looking at renewable energy and having a partner inside of the state legislature is what I believe will move the ball forward, and that's what Sarah and I from the Alaska Energy Authority had talked about earlier this morning, is how do we set as a priority renewable energy for all of Alaska, and how do we make that happen? And I don't think that we do from a freshman legislator's perspective without the buy-in of the appropriation arm of government. And so that is my hope, that we would move HB 404 forward so that we would have an opportunity to have a legislative buy-in into the process and work with the governor's office in developing a strategic plan for renewable resource and energy plan for all of Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Before we go any further, I'd like to like the committee to note that Representative Newman has joined us. And I think before we go any further, could I have somebody make a motion so that we have the CS before us for purposes of discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Newman.
I move CS for House Bill 404 /E echo for committee discussion.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, then that committee substitute is before us. Are there any questions for Representative Faircloth? All right. Well, thank you very much. So we'll now open public testimony. We have Steve Anguson on the line. And you wish to testify, Mr. Anguson?
Yes, it's Stephen Haginson. I'd like to testify.
All right. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed. Thank you.
Okay. Stephen Hagenson, and I'm the recently appointed State Energy Coordinator and the Executive Director of Alaska Energy Authority. I'd like to take this opportunity to talk about the Alaska Energy Plan we've been conducting over the next few months. We're currently developing a detailed plan, but I can talk about the plan that we have today at the high level. We have a kind of a multi-pronged approach. What we're going to be doing is, first, we're going to go out and determine the locally available energy resources. And this would involve going to individual sub-regional areas or communities and asking them, what do you know it's in the area that you'd like is available? And they can say geothermal, wind, solar, hydro, tidal, any list of things that, you know, and we would be considering all available resources, not just the renewables, but everything. Then we're going to go do an evaluation of existing technology to see if we can convert those fuels or resources into a usable energy. And we're looking to replace not just the electricity, but also the liquid fuel and everything across the board. So this is space heating, transportation, and electric uses. After that, we'll evaluate the energy delivery systems to make sure that the energy can be delivered, and identify the cost of delivered energy to the place it's going to be used. So we're comparing apples to apples. Because it's a very cheap source, they're very long distance away, it can be very expensive, so you need to compare on a common basis. And we'll identify the energy needs for each community. This is about going and identifying how many gallons of fuel they burn for existing, like electricity, or how many tons of coal they burn, or how much hydro they use currently, what they use for transportation and space heating, and identify the need, and then we will match the need with the lowest cost option and the cleanest option that we have available in that area. And that's basically the approach we're taking right now. And I think it's because sometimes if you don't match the need with the resource, it can actually change your answer. So if you have, say, 5,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 gallons of fuel to deliver, it may be a different answer than if you have only 5 gallons to deliver. So we need to look at the end-to-end process. We're being very holistic about it. Look, we're throwing everything in the hopper, and we're going to see what bubbles at the top, and we'll evaluate the best options, and then we'll deploy it out to the Alaska as rapidly as we can. And that, if you have any questions on the energy bill, the energy plan, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Thank you. Representative Newman, did you have a question? And I want to note for the record that Representative Dahlstrom has joined us.
Yes, Madam Chair, I had several questions.
Go ahead.
Mr. Hagenson, I'm excited about this prospect and what can come out of it. You said you wanted to throw everything into the hopper. Galena has recently proposed or has been approached for a nuclear power plant. Can you give me what you've got to say about that?
I throw it in the hopper and see how it comes out. I mean, I've been watching Marvin Yoder work on Galena for many years now. And I think we need to evaluate all technologies. And like I said earlier, it's not just the cheapest cost. It may be, you know, the most environmentally sound. So the community may come up and say that we want to use a certain type of resource and we prefer not to use another. And I think they should have the ability to do that. Right now, I'm not throwing any resource out. I think we should to be fair to all Alaskans, we need to go out and evaluate every resource.
I think you're right, Mr. Hagenson. And do you feel that, and is it your opinion that, you know, the problem that a lot of people have had about the nuclear power plant that's been proposed in Galena, and I know Marvin has been working it very hard, is they don't feel that it's safe. Do you feel that type of energy is safe?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't believe I'm a nuclear engineer, and I don't know about the safety, but that should be one of the things we consider before you deploy any technology. So, you know, I don't have any specific statements about nuclear power being safe or not safe. I have talked to Marvin and about that plant, and the technology, according to Marvin, has been around for probably about 30 years. It was run down in the Idaho National Labs for many years, and so it's not really a brand new technology. So it's not a prototype. It's kind of the next generation prototype. So it's got a little operating history, but, you know, again, we need to evaluate not only the source of the energy and the safety aspects, but also the unintended consequences of having nuclear waste you need to address in Alaska.
Madam Chair, I have just a couple of questions. I'll just follow through.
Okay, and then Representative Dahlstrom.
Also, Mr. Hagnison, could you talk to us about the Susitna Hydro project?
Through the chair, I would love to. The Susitna Hydro project was identified out of a Fairbanks group as being a great way to. It's a good resource that would provide reduced CO2 emissions and cheaper energy. I did a quick back in the napkin and analysis, and using about a $5,000 a kW install cost, the 8/10 of a cent O&M cost, the cost of Susitna, 600 megawatts of Susitna, would be right around $250 million a year that we pay off, and then that's about 5 cents a kilowatt hour. If you take the same exact number and use and look at the cost of gas turbines in Fairbanks and Anchorage, that would be a total of 600 megawatts of brand new and highly efficient gas turbines. It's about $500 million a year, which is about a savings of $250 million. So that piqued my interest, and I think we should take the next step to look at Susitna, identify the size that we need, identify the resource that the river can provide, and make sure it works for Alaskans.
So if I heard that right, you said about $250 million per year economic savings to the state of Alaska in a clean energy?
That's correct, but that's exactly what we have, why we have to verify. Those are kind of rough estimates, and there are a lot smarter people than I around here that can evaluate, and hydrologists that look at that river and tell you exactly what it will produce and what the end cost results will be, and that's, we're trying to move it forward for that reason.
Yeah, I realize, you know, with the turbine power, too, that they're using in rivers and tidal power. I believe at Fort McKinsey they have a tidal power generator. It's an experimental that they could use along the Yukon River, a lot of other places. It's good stuff. And maybe, Madam Chair, I don't know if this is better for the carrier of this bill, sponsor of this bill, or Mr. Hagnison, but about the task force, I'm assuming you would set up your goals and then have action items on how you would get to those goals. And is there a plan or a mission statement on how you'd move forward on that?
Representative Fairclough.
Madam Chairman, members of the committees, if you refer to page 2, line 7, it speaks to specifically what the task force would prepare in a report that includes the assessment of future statewide renewable energy needs and make recommendations for a statewide energy plan to fulfill the state's renewable energy needs.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to say on the record, Steve, I am so grateful that you accepted the position that you have. For the committee's benefit, I've had the privilege of having several conversations with him, and he is extremely qualified to be in this position, and I think that we are going to see some fantastic results come out of not only the work of this task force, but with Steve leading the state, you know, down this path. So as a state, we're very lucky to have you, and we appreciate your willingness to do that. But just a couple comments from the question that was asked by Representative Newman on the nuclear energy. My experience in dealing with the military in Alaska and the things that they are involved with in nuclear, especially at Fort Greeley, there's all the data is there on the safety, what happens with the remnants of anything and all that, but certain people will have to gain a higher security clearance, and I'm sure Steve and several others will be working or are probably already working on that, and they will have that. So I'm pretty confident that we're not going to put that into our state without them doing full research on it. And if any of you have had the opportunity to go to Fort Greeley and look at what's already existing and pertaining to nuclear, it might answer, you know, some of the concerns that you have on that. But just a comment on that.
Thank you. Anything further, Representative Dahlstrom?
No, I think it's a great bill.
Okay. Representative Sisner.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I think this is a question to either and both the sponsor and Mr. Hagnison. If I got that right, pronunciation?
That's correct.
And that question is, in numbers of the communities that I've been to in the state, is some of them in the 80s and early 90s, thinking of Kotzebue and their effort and successful effort with wind, and the fact that they're going out and working with other communities on that kind of energy source. And then conversations with other communities where they've got things like geothermal right next to them, and with potential funding to help it happen. Obviously, in those cases, it's only a local fix, but could be a substantial fix, as it is in Kotzebue, to have a source of renewable energy that carries a reasonable percentage of the local energy need. That is not a statewide energy solution. Are those kinds of things going to be considered?
Was that a question for me, ma'am?
Yes, it's for either or.
Okay. Through the chair, if I could answer that first. All of those things would be considered, and that's why we're going to go out to the communities and ask them what resources are available, because they'll know more things than we'll know about their area. And you could rely on the statewide map or an index to show all the resources, but I want to go out and actually engage the people and have them be part of the solution. I guess the reason, for two reasons here, I think I'd like to see Alaska become self-reliant in energy again. And the reason I'd like to be there is because the impact, if you have a local job providing local resources, you're going to help your local economy. And that's really why I'm concerned about, and why I'm involved in this energy plan right now, is because of the long-term impacts on the economy and the draining of the economy I've seen because all the money that's going out of their communities. So I would embrace any technology that's available. And that's what we're going to be evaluating, is all the technologies, find the best option, and then deploy it in that community. There may be some communities that have a small, very small use, and it may be cheaper to go ahead and import it, to continue to import. I don't know that yet, but that's why we need to be evaluating all the options.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve. Just two questions. I'll ask them, then you can kind of talk about them. I was curious. You said Alaska will be self-reliant on energy again, and I didn't know we were at one time, so maybe you could talk about that. And also talk about, there's been discussion on the development of some of the mines in Alaska, Donlin and even Pebble, where they would put in electrical generation plants for their own electricity and make those large enough where they can run transmission lines to a lot of the nearby villages. Would that, in your opinion, help reduce some of the cost for rural electricity? Or is that feasible, or what's the deal?
Through the chair, I'm not sure that the mines are going to reduce the cost of electricity. Right now we need to evaluate that. If they have a large mine, they may be able to spin it off, but again, it's the delivered cost. And if the mine, if the village or the city's, 20, 30 miles away, it may not be economic to really deliver it over those distances, or even 100 miles away. So you need to look at the delivered cost from that mine generator, because they're really there to serve the mine, and they may ancillarily serve the other areas around it. But you need to look at the delivered cost of that area. And the target's pretty big as far as energy cost goes in most parts of Alaska right now. So you want to make a speculation. I'd speculate that it could be cheaper, but you need to evaluate that. And on the self-reliance part, obviously Alaska is using our own fuel or crude oil. The problem with that is it's very, very, it's crushing the economy. And so what I'd like to do is look for local resources so you can start build the economy back up. At that time, and I would characterize that as being self-reliant. So you're using local fuels, local businesses to provide your local energy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions for Mr. Higginson? All right, well, thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you.
Anybody else online? Anybody here in the audience that would like to testify? Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Committee. My name is Ben Ellis. I'm the Managing Director of the Institute of the North, based in Anchorage, Alaska. It was founded in 1994 by former Governor Wally Hickel. We are a nonprofit 501c3 that focus on Alaska and Arctic issues. I would like to just mention that the Institute in October of this past year held the Arctic Energy Summit Technology Conference in Anchorage, Alaska. We had more than 300 delegates from 14 different nations that participated in that. Unfortunately, it was a day or two before your special session, so we didn't have many legislators there. But the three areas that particular conference looked at dealt with renewable energy, extractive energy, and the challenge of providing affordable energy in rural communities, whether in northern Alaska, northern Canada, northern Russia, or throughout the Arctic. That is an international poll year project, and as an IPY project for the follow-up for this year, we have an action team that's looking at those three areas and challenges and coming up with some specific roadmaps. One deals with renewable energy and looking at the use of tidal in both non-ice covered waters and in ice covered waters, and what are the techniques and technologies throughout the Arctic that would be applicable to Alaska. These recommendations will go toward the Arctic Council ministerial meeting, which are the eight nations that represent the nations in the Arctic. That will go to them next spring. I just would like to offer, if the Institute of the North could help in this particular task force, we're very supportive of this idea, and if we could help bring possibly international perspective to what other Arctic nations are doing in these areas, we would be very happy to do that.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ellis, I'm very curious because you've been working on this for a long time, and you seem like your organization is very well oiled and organized, and you've got literally right. You've been into this for a while, and so you know the issues. So how could your group work together with this task force? And I'm assuming the university is probably working on this issue too. So how many groups are already?
There's a lot.
There's already quite a few groups,
right,
that are working
on
energy.
What I think you've captured, I think the author of this bill have captured the majority players within the state of Alaska on this. Like I said, my only contribution, I would think, I mean, besides collaborating with a lot of these individuals, would be able to bring some more of an Arctic perspective of what's going on in Sweden or Norway or Finland, that type of thing, to especially as this bill focuses on renewable energy issues. And that would be the area that I think we could contribute something to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Ben, you think that if this renewable energy task force was to be formed, it would be very beneficial in the fact that it could bring members from each one of those groups. You said there's quite a few groups around that could bring all those groups together to sit down at the table, and it would be they could work in coalition together.
Right, Madam Chair, through the chair, that's exactly right. I mean, I listening to the sponsor's comments this morning, what I think this does is provide a structure, an umbrella, an opportunity for a lot of people that are working on energy challenges in Alaska. And we all know that, as far as I'm concerned, is the largest, biggest challenge that we have faced this right now. If we don't solve the energy challenge here in Alaska, everything else is going to be secondary. This brings those entities together to look at what what the state energy plan is going to be. It looks at with Mira Kohler's group of Alaska Village Electric Cooperative what the village areas are doing, what the university and research is doing, so that there can be a dialogue to help focus what a lot of us have been working on.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions? Is there anybody else in the audience who'd like to testify? All right, then I'm going to close out public hearing And the bill is now before us. Any committee discussion? Then what is the pleasure of the committee? Can I have a motion? Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wish to move the CS for House Bill number 404-25-LS1514/E with individual recommendations.
And attached.
And attached physical note. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Well, the bill will move, and we'll take a short at ease in order to get the thing signed.
This is Representative Anna Fairclough, co-chair of Community Regional Affairs, joined back on the record by Representative Olson, Representative Co-Chair Ledoux, Representative Newman, Representative Cisna, and Representative Dahlstrom is here this morning, just stepped out of the room for a moment. Before us now, in room 124 in the sunny capital of Juneau this morning, no snow falling for those of you listening, which is remarkable. The precipitation isn't on our heads coming to work today. We have before us HB 388. This is an act establishing the Alaska Broadband Task Force and providing for an effective date. For those of you joining us in the audience, if you could turn off your cell phones, it does interrupt our recording ability and transmission to those that are listening and following us from across the state. So off is the best position versus in a vibrate mode. Representative Guttenberg, are you here to preview the bill for us this morning?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring before you this bill that sets up a task force. I would like to tell you a little bit about how I came to be here. November 06, got a letter in the mail saying my internet provider, which happened to provide television as well, was just leaving the state. No warning, no anything, just we're gone. Alaska Wireless was the name of the company, not affiliated with Alaska Wireless that's here now, which I think is out in Dutch Harbor. December 31st, my television and internet went blank. All I had was dial-up with my hardwire telephone provider. And beyond adequate would be optimistic about the service I was getting. Thank you. So I figured, okay, I'm coming down to Juneau. By the time I get back in May, somebody would have picked up the slack. Well, it was over a year without any internet service. Television isn't that important. That was provided in another way. So I started looking around, trying to figure out what's going on, what the issue is. And a part of that process, I found out that there were over, just in the Fairbanks area, there were 2,000 people without service, not just from my provider, but from a lot of other places and a lot of people. And I did surveys. I went into the high schools, asked students. I sent out in my newsletter questionnaires. It was in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. And the articles, the comments that I got back were really significant. People who couldn't do commerce anymore, or it was so slow. Teachers that couldn't work from home. Students that couldn't do research. People in business that couldn't communicate with their office. And as a legislator, I could not open bases, do any research, look at my calendar. I had to call my staff or anything. Found out many other people were like me in the same situation. I would turn on a computer, open my internet program, and walk away, have breakfast, come back, see if it finished loading. Getting in touch with the other providers in town, nobody was actually doing anything to expand service to all these people that didn't have any. So I was working on a bill, trying to figure out what to do. This is a very large issue. I mean, this is not phone wars, but it's out there on a scale of, you know, what's available across the state. The state has little influence on internet service. It's mostly FEC things, but there's a lot of things that we can do. And in my exploration of that, I found out that a bill setting up a task force passed out of this legislature in '03. Which didn't have a final report. it was a bill that Representative Cott had done. Most of us that were here signed on to it, voted yes. Red Boucher, who was chairing that up, Red is ill now, and we haven't been able to really communicate with him about what happened. But the final report of that is mostly a short PowerPoint presentation. Then in February last month, the Institute of the North and the University of Alaska Anchorage had a forum on this issue as well. So we're trying to go down the road and find out what the economic opportunities are that we've missed to be able to bring internet to all people of Alaska. In rural districts, they have the eNet, which is only available in the schools, I think maybe in some clinics as well. But if you graduate high school and you get out of school and you've been on the internet, all of a sudden you don't have anything. You can't afford the services that's out there if it's even there. So what we want to do, what this bill is trying to do, is bring together the user groups, a couple legislators and the user groups, to find out what the world is. When so let me tell you, since that time in this year, in 08, Steve Haginson, in his insight in his previous life, let me give a plug for Steve, as the CEO of Golden Valley, set up an independent company that is providing wireless internet service, as is AT&T doing that. But they're not looking at the big picture. They're looking at their small market. So as we go along and looking at energy issues, this one has huge economic implications for the whole state. What we're trying to do is to find out what that is, allow define that for where we are, what we need to do, and allow industry to come in and plug those holes in it and look over the horizon to things that need to be done and bring people bring Alaska to the forefront of this industry for services to the people of the state.
Thank you. Are there any questions specific to what the bill would do? Before we do have people that would like to testify before us for the committee today. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And can you just tell me who's online to testify, and then I'll know if it's appropriate to save my questions for them or to ask the sponsor?
We have from Alaska Regulatory Commission, Rich Gasway, Alex Hills, Self, Jim Rowe, from the Alaska Telephone Association, Steve Smith from the University of Fairbanks.
Okay. And then I guess just a quick question to the sponsor. Have you spoke with any of the what are almost completely statewide telecommunication companies?
Yes, I have.
Or GCI and
I started off down here over last session asking them, what are you doing? When I get home in May last year, are you going to be exploring this? Are you going to be expanding your markets? Basically, no. I mean, I have a lot of letters from people that say the DSL goes by my house. My neighbor has it on one side. My neighbor has it on the other side, and I can't get it. I've been on a waiting list for 5 years. So my question to them was, are you building up your system? The answer is pretty much no. We're not actually doing anything to bring those people online. They're maxed out. They're doing little things to enhance their product, but as a whole, no. AT&T Cellular One is. I've talked with all of them. AT&T is doing considerable things. They're getting into the wireless market in Fairbanks, and I'm delighted at that. I've spoken with Mike Felix about that. He was in the office earlier this month, asking, you know, what my intent here was, and you know, I wanted to make sure that he understood I wasn't trying to push them in a direction. I was trying to create markets for them for them better understanding what it was in the statewide. And they're actually doing a lot of things in the villages and such. So I have been in conversation with those guys over the year.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dahlstrom. Representative Ledoux, and then Representative Cisna.
Okay, I think I've got a couple of questions. It says in legislative findings and purpose, the legislature finds that, and this is on page 1, line 12 through 14, removing barriers to broadband deployment by using technology, et cetera, will encourage lower prices. What what barriers are we talking about?
Well, some of the things that out there might be the E-rate. It might just simply be able to expand that out to some communities. Sometimes it's just the fact that there's nothing on one tower. One of the situations that I had in my house, and I'm 6 miles from the university, and I couldn't get anybody's service, but I was told if you simply could get an antenna up on another tower that's pre-existing and face it back the other way, that's considered a barrier. If you're in the hills, you need, even if the antenna might be facing you, it might be bouncing off of things, so you need it coming from another direction. And barriers that, you know, sometimes with handicap barriers, there's things that we don't understand, but in this field, it might just be there's too much iron in the hills behind you, so you need the waves coming at you from different directions.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux, and Representative Dahlstrom has a question on that point.
So is it your idea that this task force may be recommending things like subsidies? Because it would kind of seem to me that the utilities like ATT, AT&T, ACS, GCI, and so forth must be looking into these things, and if they think that there's money to be made out there, they're going to do it, and if they don't think that there's money out there, it's probably a matter of they don't think that a market is going to be economically viable. I mean, are there things that you've heard from the telephone companies, the utilities, that suggest that there are other problems other than simply economics?
I've had those conversations, and one of the problems that I have had, one of the discussions I've had with people other than the utility companies themselves, is the Universal Service Fund, which is a subsidy like rural electrification was, that a lot of them are getting. Instead of building out, they're just building up what they already have. So I'm not looking to recommend any subsidies. What I'm looking at is to define what the issue is, what the problem is, where it is, and give them opportunities. But I think in Congress, there are people that are saying, if you're going to get that universal service fund, then you need to actually build out your system like rural electrification has been done, instead of building up your existing. So perhaps it'll be a recommendation to the FEC to do that. But I don't have any preconceived ideas of where this is going to go.
Representative Dahlstrom on that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add, I have 15 years of telecommunications experience, and other things that are considered are distance, and not only distance, but terrain. Even if it was just 2 miles, what is the terrain? What's the weather? How much permafrost? Are they going to hang wires, you know, bury cable in the ground? You know, what are they going to do? How can a technician get safely out to do the, you know, maintenance and then get back, you know, all those. So there's a lot that goes into it. The LASCOM was White Alice, you know, in the military days, and then it became LASCOM, and now, you know, AT&T LASCOM, and now we just call them AT&T. But the federal law mandated them to provide services to any community all over Alaska that had 25 or more residents there, no matter the cost. And I know for a fact that service was provided at a loss to, a financial loss to the company at times. But because of the federal laws and some subsidies that they were receiving, you know, that's what was done. The Universal Services Fund, I don't know if you've ever tried to read that document. I have, and there are so many fingers that crisscross just all over the place. It's incredible. So I think it's really crucial on the intent of this is awesome. I think it's really crucial that we work with RCA and we work with, you know, those back in DC that are looking at, you know, what the Universal Services Act actually does. Potentially we might need to request some tweaks in that from our delegation back there, because this is truly an area where Alaska is different than any other state in the country. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Did you have a response, Representative?
No, I just wanted to point out that this coverage in the state is so irregular and so inconsistent. Last year when I was on my way to Chitna to go fishing, they were installing a fiber optics cable from Kenny Lake, which had it for 10 years, to Chitna, Representative Salmon's district. Those are small districts. They were installing, it was money from Senator Stevens, but it just amazed me when I had no coverage at home and they were getting fiber optics to those communities. I mean, that's just an example of how inconsistent the coverage we have in Alaska is.
Thank you, Representative Gutenberg. Representative Cisna, then Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really thank the sponsor of this bill because at least it's been my experience in this body. In 2000, I was on the Economic Trade and Tourism, and we actually did look at in 2000 what was happening in the state, and the state was beginning to see what was happening globally, that in fact this was something that was potential. There was the contract that I assume still does exist for telecommunications and getting and it's a state contract as it was then, and you probably know more about it. I haven't tracked this. It needed to have been tracked, because at that time there was an extensive training going on with rural school teachers to help them teach in the classrooms in remote communities that were being planned to get internet access. And at that time we talked to the local telephone companies that obviously needed to be talked with more and to find ways to help them fit into the picture, just as they do across the country, just as they do across the world. And so I know that we started then, but we're not, and it is inconsistent because I've been in many remote communities, was emailing back and forth from Nikolsky out on, pretty far out in the Aleutians, and last year was in the Philippines on a remote island emailing back. So it can be done, and it can be done from very modest little communities, but it's inconsistent is what I've seen, and I'm just very, very happy. Can you maybe speak to what the state is actually doing that this can fit into as well?
Not very well.
Okay.
Madam Chair, through the chair. No, I can't address that in any way that that would be factual or to help that.
Thank you. Representative Cisna, I just would comment for the edification of committee members that we do have a floor session, and we do have people online that are wanting to testify. So I don't think we'll be able to move the bill from committee today and allow the testimony and then the additional dialogue. But I am in no way trying to hold the bill up. I do believe in the broadband issue, but I would like to get to public testimony for those who have joined. Representative Newman.
No, let the public speak.
Madam Chair, could we do the RCA first?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, it is 9:50, and the public hearing is now open on HB 388. There's been a request to go off net to Rich Gosway. Rich, are you with us?
Yes, Madam Chair.
I see that you're with us today for questions, but do you have any comments by what you've heard?
Well, I can perhaps provide some insight on some efforts that have been underway to deploy broadband throughout Alaska. One of the efforts is we administer a federally funded broadband grant, and that program has some restrictions in the appropriating language that only allow funding for areas without local dial-up or broadband access. In other words, if a community has a local dial-up connection, it cannot receive funding. There has been efforts to have that legislation amended to allow funding to areas with poor local dial-up connections without broadband access. And that is in front of Congress right now. It has not been acted on. There's a Senate amendment to a House bill that is under that is moving towards the House concurrence, I would believe. That would impact some funding for this grant that may be available in areas that Representative Gutenberg referred to that cannot receive the funding now. I'd also note that the SEC has an open docket where they're considering expanding the Universal Service Fund to include a broadband fund. I wouldn't say that's a determined issue, but it's one that's open for comment as we speak. With that, I'd be open to answer any questions.
Rich, the bells are ringing, and it's not just in your head. It's in the halls of the Capitol. So for those of you listening, we're having a slight interruption, which is telling us that we only have a few minutes left before we need to gavel out. Rich, will you be back with us if we can bring this bill back up on Tuesday?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, sir. With that, I do have people that are online as well as those who have flown into Juneau, and so the people who have who are online, I'm going to try to get to you, but I truly, people who have spent money to come down to Juneau to speak to us in person, I feel obligated to try to get them before us. Ben Ellis, you're here with us in Juneau this morning. And if you're telling me you're from Juneau, then I'm going to be a little disappointed to make others wait. But
thank you, Madam Chairman. No, Ben Ellis is to the north, Anchorage, Alaska. I'll be very brief. We are very supportive of this bill. As Representative said, it was very serendipitous that the Institute of the North and the University of Alaska was holding a Alaska statewide telecom workshop February 15th, where we had about 35 to 40 participants. We had all of the providers there represented. We had user groups. We had those from the Native community. We had those from the academic area. More than 40 states have used this approach. Some of the most recent include Hawaii and others, looking at the broadband challenge. I'm here to support the bill. Thank you, ma'am.
Any questions from committee members? Mr. Ellis, thank you for joining us this morning. In the audience, Bruce Johnson, would you like to speak to us this morning on HB 388? It's blank on the yes or no, so I saw you come in.
Madam Chair, we are here in Juneau, and so we can come back on Tuesday. I represent the Alaska Association of School Boards, and we're very supportive of having this connectivity, both for families as well as young people. It is the wave of the future. It's probably past the wave of the future. It's here today. Thank you.
Sir, we won't count that as testimony so that you can speak to us when it's back before us again. Rachel Petro, it says no, but I just wanted. Okay, thank. Just wanted to confirm. Alex Hills, are you online?
This is Dr. Alex Hills. I'm here.
Sir, your testimony on HB 388.
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alex Hills. I'm the owner of a consulting practice in Palmer, which specializes in high-tech product development, particularly wireless, and also hold a faculty appointment as Distinguished Service Professor at Carnegie Mellon University, specializing in telecommunications policy, particularly as it relates to deployment in rural and remote areas, both within the United States and also outside the United States. I had the privilege to chair the workshop that was referred to a couple of times in Anchorage, held on February 15th and sponsored by the University of Alaska and the Institute of the North. As has been mentioned, the representatives of all the major telecommunications providers were there, and many others interested in telecommunications gathered to discuss the state of broadband. There was, I thought, a very productive conversation and very polite, considering that some of the representatives in the meeting represented different sides of the issues, but there was in general a consensus that broadband service is badly needed for reasons of economic development, healthcare delivery of quality education, and generally participation in the mainstream economy and the mainstream society. And there it was also clear that broadband deployment is lagging in Alaska, both when measured against other states and also when measured against other parts of the world. I couldn't help but reflect on times back in the 1970s when Alaska gained an understanding that basic telecommunication services in rural Alaska were lagging behind. In those days, basic services meant radio, television, and telephone service. And back in the 70s, due to leadership from Governor Jay Hammond and others, Alaska did something rather dramatic about it. And within several years, due to aggressive action by state government and others, we were able to provide those basic services throughout the state. I was privileged to participate in that as Alaska's chief telecommunications official under Governor Hammond. Now, basic services increasingly can be defined to include broadband or high-speed internet, so I would suggest to you that it's once again time for some dramatic action by the state of Alaska to bring our state and especially our rural residents up to what has become the international standard for basic service. I would suggest to you, however, that House Bill 388 is really only a start. It's not an action plan. It only establishes a task force to propose a plan, but I think it's a small start, a small step in the right direction, and I would suggest that you advance the bill. Thank you very much for listening.
Mr. Hill, thank you for joining us and waiting so patiently this morning. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Mr. Hill. Steve Smith from the University of Alaska, we have about 3 minutes left. The bells are ringing in the halls asking us to come to the House floor. If committee members could hold, there is only one other person online today, so we might be able to get through the people that are waiting this morning, but I will not close public hearing so that others, should they want to still testify, can do so. Mr. Smith, are you joining us online?
I am online.
Your testimony, sir.
Thank you. My name is Steve Smith. I am the Chief Information and Technology Officer for the University of Alaska System. I'll be very brief and just say at the start, I encourage you to consider moving this forward. I'm very much in favor of this bill. Broadband technology is critical to us in this age, as roads, power, water treatment are for all of our communities, for economic development, for health, for access to government, for education. There are 33 other states that have broadband legislation, 40 states that have statutes involving broadband. This is something that we all need to work together on. The carriers are doing their best to do this, but they have barriers that are technical, economic, regulatory, and resource. We still do not have the basic internet service across the state, let alone the broadband services that are coming. In my position at the university, I see the next generation coming, and we are far behind on that. And what we need is a comprehensive look and plan to work together to move us forward in this, or we will literally be left behind. And I will close my remarks right now in interest of time, but I strongly support this.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we appreciate your patience in waiting. The last person that I show online this morning is Jim Rowe from Eagle River, and I believe he's representing Alaska Telephone Association. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. I have a statement here, and I'm not going to go through it. I appreciate the time you folks are allowing me, and you're cutting it pretty close and getting to the floor. Let me tell you that we, the association, is in support of House Bill 388. We appreciate Representative Guttenberg bringing it to our attention. It's a situation where we really need to have a very thorough discussion. As mentioned by some of the committee members, there are challenges in infrastructure. There are challenges in economics. There are many challenges, and those have to be brought out and discussed very thoroughly. I would point out a couple things that demonstrate our interest. we put on an annual meeting in the state of Alaska, the association. We'll have about 200 people perhaps coming to Girdwood in May. One of the agenda items is a discussion of this bill. And Dr. Smith from the University of Alaska will be presenting that. We also, if you look at the sponsor's statement, see a quote from Connected Nation Incorporated. We have a representative from Connected Nation who is going to come and make a separate presentation to us. And this is based on Kentucky Connect, which has been an example nationally for bringing broadband out to rural areas. The hills of Kentucky have been well served by what's happened there. I would point out to you an article in this morning's Anchorage Daily News entitled "Web Traffic Swelling to a Slowdown." And a quote from that is, "Digital traffic on a global network is growing about 50% per year." I show you that, mention that, only to demonstrate that there is demand for this worldwide. These are brief comments. We're very much in support of this, and I look forward to participating with the task force when it comes into operation. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Mr. Rowe, thank you so much for your patience in waiting. If you do have, or if there's anyone here or listening, testimony that you'd like the committee to review, you can email that to either Representative Ledoux's office or myself, and we'll make sure that it goes out to all committee members. Or you can fax Representative Ledoux's office at 907-465-4956 or Representative Fairclough's office at 907-465-2819. With that, we will leave the public hearing open, and this committee will adjourn so that we can go to the House floor. It's a few minutes after 10. Thank you.